Ernest Hemingway. Islands in the Stream. Part 1. Bimini. 1. The house was built on the highest part of the narrow tongue of land between the harbor and the open sea. It had lasted through 3 hurricanes and it was built solid as a ship. It was shaded by tall coconut palms that were bent by the trade wind, and on the ocean side you could walk out of the door and down the bluff across the white sand and into the Gulf Stream. The water of the stream was usually a dark blue when you looked out at it when there was no wind. But when you walked out into it, there was just the green light of the water over that flowery white sand, and you could see the shadow of any big fish a long time before he could ever come in close to the beach. It was a safe and fine place to bathe in the day, but it was no place to swim at night. At night, the sharks came in close to the beach, hunting in the edge of the stream, and from the upper porch of the house on quiet nights you could hear the splashing of the fish they hunted, and if you went down to the beach you could see the phosphorescent wakes they made in the water. At night the sharks had no fear and everything else feared them. But in the day they stayed out away from the clear white sand, and if they did come in you could see their shadows a long way away. A man named Thomas Hudson, who was a good painter, lived there in that house and worked there and on the island the greater part of the year. After one has lived in those latitudes long enough, the changes of the seasons become as important there as anywhere else, and Thomas Hudson, who loved the island, did not want to miss any spring, nor summer, nor any fall or winter. Sometimes the summers were too hot when the wind dropped in August, or when the trade winds sometimes failed in June and July. Hurricanes, too, might come in September and October and even in early November, and there could be freak tropical storms any time from June on. But the true hurricane months have fine weather when there are no storms. Thomas Hudson had studied tropical storms for many years, and he could tell from the sky when there was a tropical disturbance long before his barometer showed its presence. He knew how to plot storms and the precautions that should be taken against them. He knew, too, what it was to live through a hurricane with the other people of the island and the bond that the hurricane made between all people who had been through it. He also knew that hurricanes could be so bad that nothing could live through them. He always thought, though, that if there was ever one that bad, he would like to be there for it and go with the house if she went. The house felt almost as much like a ship as a house. Placed there to ride out storms, it was built into the island as though it were a part of it. But you saw the sea from all the windows, and there was good cross ventilation so that you slept cool on the hottest nights. The house was painted white to be cool in the summer, and it could be seen from a long way out in the Gulf Stream. It was the highest thing on the island except for the long planting of tall casuarina trees that were the first thing you saw as you raised the island out of the sea. Soon after you saw the dark blur of casuarina trees above the line of the sea, you would see the white bulk of the house. Then, as you came closer, you raised the whole length of the island with the coconut palms, the clapboarded houses, the white line of the beach, and the green of the South Island stretching beyond it. Thomas Hudson never saw the house, there on that island, but that the sight of her made him happy. He always thought of the house as her exactly as he would have thought of a ship. In the winter, when the northers blew and it was really cold, the house was warm and comfortable because it had the only fireplace on the island. It was a big open fireplace, and Thomas Hudson burned driftwood in it. He had a big pile of driftwood stacked against the south wall of the house. It was whitened by the sun and sand, scoured by the wind, and he would become fond of different pieces so that he would hate to burn them. But there was always more driftwood along the beach after the big storms, and he found it was fun to burn even the pieces he was fond of. He knew the sea would sculpt more, and on a cold night he would sit in the big chair in front of the fire, reading by the lamp that stood on the heavy plank table, and look up while he was reading to hear the northwester blowing outside and the crashing of the surf, and watch the great, bleached pieces of driftwood burning. Sometimes he would put the lamp out and lie on the rug on the floor and watch the edges of color that the sea salt and the sand in the wood made in the flame as they burned. On the floor, his eyes were even with the line of the burning wood, and he could see the line of the flame when it left the wood, and it made him both sad and happy. All wood that burned affected him in this way. But burning driftwood did something to him that he could not define. He thought that it was probably wrong to burn it when he was so fond of it. But he felt no guilt about it. As he lay on the floor, he felt under the wind, although, really, the wind whipped at the lower corners of the house and at the lowest grass on the island and into the roots of the seagrass and the cockleburs and into the sand itself. On the floor, he could feel the pounding of the surf the way he remembered feeling the firing of heavy guns when he had lain on the earth close by some battery a long time ago when he had been a boy. The fireplace was a great thing in winter, and through all the other months he looked at it with affection and thought how it would be when winter came again. Winter was the best of all seasons on the island, and he looked forward to it through all the rest of the year.